You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Well, if adventure had a name, it would be Indiana Jones, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing on the Indie Files, and I'm so excited to be back with our second episode, and none other than adventurer Yancey Evans to talk the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles with me. Yancey, man, it's great to be back. I'm so excited we're doing this.
It is great to be back, Matt, and it is great to once again don the fedora and see what adventure Indy has got himself wrapped up into this time.
Well, I gotta say, you look much better in the fedora than I do, but we would love it if you would find us and follow us all over social media. Of course, you can find us, we're in the 602 Club feed, so you can find us on social media on X Twitter at the 602 Club. You can also find us on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. We're over on Facebook with the entire network at Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. We're online at trek.fm. You can also, of course, find us wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe. Give us a star rating review. Let people know that you love the show and help us out that way. And, of course, we're over on Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm, where you can make sure that all of these great shows keep coming to you each and every week. So, yeah, see, we told everybody last time that we are covering this show as they did with the original broadcast airing, which meant that we had an old indie segment that was a bookend for the episode itself. And so this episode is London 1916. And I really had to ask you about this because I felt like the old indie bookend from the first episode worked so well and really fit the episode so well. How did you feel that this, you know, old indie bookend worked with the episode itself?
Well, I liked it. It's obviously not as strong narratively as the other bookend. This is just more of it just kind of sets the tone that this is going to be Indy's musings on romance, and I mean honestly, for me, the end with Jane Wyatt as the love interest that we'll learn about, you know, as the episode goes on, you know, Spock's mom being Indy's love interest at the end, that was just wonderful. But it's not as strong a narrative bookend as some of the other episodes, which are much stronger. This is more of a, okay, we're setting up the story. This is what's going to happen. And Indy's kind of reflecting back on this time in his life.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I do really agree with everything you said. I feel like that it's the opening bookend, which just doesn't have the weight or the gravitas to really actually lead us into, I feel like, the story that we're about to tell. I would have loved to have maybe seen kind of a rewrite on that, where what's being said by these ladies triggers that story for Indy to tell when he's in London before he heads off with the Belgium army, you know, into World War One. I think that would have really helped, you know, what happens there be stronger, because I wanted to ask you about this. You know, this then creates an incredibly pivotal story to this point of what we know of Indiana Jones, that this is the first time that he truly falls in love to the point where he would literally ask somebody to marry him. I mean, this is, in some ways, I almost feel like not having this story seem to have any kind of impact on Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, really, or, you know, even Dial of Destiny feels a little bit strange, because, like, the way this, and we're going to jump around a lot in this, but, like, even just the way this episode ends, it just felt like this is such an incredibly poignant and pivotal story for the character of who Indiana Jones will become, where it's like, you know, he comes, seems like he becomes a little bit more of a playboy as he gets away from, you know, what happened here. And it's because in some ways of the rejection and what happened here.
Yeah, this is, I found this story is really interesting. I this is one of my favorite episodes of the show altogether, and especially of the early first season episodes. And to your point, like, and we forgot to mention it last week, that there's actually a reference to the pilot episode in yep. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, because Eddie talks to Mutt about how he fought with Pancho Villa, and it's just a wonderful little add-on. But this story, what I love so much about this story is it really is kind of that pivotal. It's the first time, it's kind of the first time you truly fall in love with somebody and you're willing to, you know, throw everything to the four winds and commit yourself wholly to this person. But I think it also goes to something we talked about last week, is that Andy's in this really weird place as, you know, an older teenager, that where he's kind of finding his way in the world, and he's kind of prone to kind of jump on to, you know, causes and things he feels deeply, you know, heartfelt about. And this is certainly a woman and a cause he kind of gets attached to because of his attraction to her. But then he comes around, you know, as we'll see later on in the episode, where he comes to truly believe in the cause that the girl is espousing. And it's just, it's a really interesting character study. And it is one of those things where I kind of wish they'd done some kind of nod in Crystal Skull somewhere. But I think that was probably a bridge too far for Spielberg. I think George was, you know, just wanted to give his one nod in there. So,
well, and I like that you pinpoint that, because I think one of the important things that we learned for Indiana Jones in this episode was the impact of the death of his mother has had on him, and the fact that his tutor has in some ways kind of taken that space from his mother for him, and that he, I think, then is attracted, it seems very much so, to strong women. And their strength, because again, you think of his relationship with his tutor, and she is this no-nonsense woman who has incredible strength, incredible knowledge. And so then knowing that by this point that his mother has passed, which also leads us to understand maybe a bit of why Indiana Jones is feeling this sense of kind of unmooredness to everything else. And he's trying to find his place in the world, and he's trying to find the thing that he cares about, and something that makes him feel again, because it, you know, it seems that at this point there's already kind of an estrangement with his father starting. And so all of that, I think, is incredibly valuable then for the storytelling elements of who Indiana Jones is at this point, and what's making him kind of do the things that he's doing. So therefore, it makes it complete sense as to why Vicky would be a woman that he would be not only attracted to, but want to marry, because there's a strength in her that, in some ways, I feel like galvanizes Indiana Jones as a character, because she cares deeply for the idea of suffrage for women in the same way that he wants to feel deeply about something and care about something. And what it really gets to is this idea, and it's interesting that in the episode we don't necessarily really dig into this, and I wish the episode actually did, but it's this idea of how we as individuals, we need to feel that we have purpose. Without purpose, we feel lost. And that's what Indiana Jones is searching for. That's why he went and served with Pancho Villa. That's why he's about to join up and fight this war of World War I. Because it feels like it's going to give him the purpose that he's searching for. You know, in so many ways, Indiana Jones is the U2 song I still haven't found what I'm looking for. You know? Yeah. And what this series is doing so far, especially as we, you know, talk about these episodes with the older Indiana Jones, we're really seeing what happens when somebody loses somebody pivotal to their lives, like a mother or a father, and how that can cause this spiraling effect that leads them questioning everything and then longing to find almost a replacement for that, which makes this episode, I think, make so much sense then as to why he immediately gravitates towards this incredibly strong, driven woman who knows exactly what she wants. And it, you know, why wouldn't you be attracted to that? I don't know anybody who wouldn't be attracted to that character of woman that then is wrapped in the package of Elizabeth Hurley.
Right. Well, I think one of the things, you know, setting aside the intro bookend, I think the script for this episode is particularly exceptional, especially as it relates to the relationship between Andy and Vicky. And you can just see, and it's also the credit to the actors too. Sean Patrick Flannery is just fantastic, and Elizabeth Hurley is always fantastic in anything she does. There's this chemistry between them, but the script is so smart, and you can see the relationship start to develop. You know, events occur that make sense. You know, it's not stuff that's forced into the story to make things happen. One of my favorite scenes in the whole episode is, you know, they've kind of been going through this loose romance, but they're, you know, nothing's been galvanized or anything like that. And they run into this family, this mother and her two children, out in the park all by themselves. They're obviously somewhat homeless. They're about to lose their home. And, you know, Andy, without any kind of pressure, volunteers to help this family, you know, and make rent. And there's this wonderful scene too, where, you know, he explains that he's giving the money as a loan and he can pay the woman back. And I love the comment that the woman says to Vicky, you know, you've got a wonderful gentleman there. And she just quietly says, yes, I do. And it's just such a wonderfully touching scene where she's starting to fall in love with him. And he's clearly already attracted to her, but you can see he's starting to fall in love with her. And it's just, I just think the script is so good with these two characters in particular. And there's just this natural progression through the episode where everything makes sense. And it just allows the actors to kind of play with, you know, the parts and just kind of flourish. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I love the way in which it feels very natural that Indiana Jones would fall for Vicky, but it also feels very natural that Vicky would fall for Indiana Jones. And I think when you think about who she is as a character and what she believes and what she's been fighting for, and the way Indy responds to that as supportive, but also completely masculine and a complete gentleman all at the same time. You know, this is the type of thing that these women desired, right? They wanted to be supported by the men in their lives this way. I mean, obviously, it's what we see from Vicky's father. You know, Vicky's father and the way he responded to his wife and her work on suffrage is the exact same way that we've seen Indy respond to Vicky. And so it makes complete sense as to why she would and he would fall in love. And so I do want to ask you, because obviously, you know, I think it's no surprise that they're not going to get married. But I was struck by the reasoning as to why Vicky decides to not choose marriage with Indiana Jones. And I felt as though it felt a little bit too almost late 20th century to 21st century. I don't know if I'm right on that, but it just felt like she was a little bit too modern for her own good in the writing of the episode, that it didn't necessarily ring completely true. But then, you know, I haven't spent tons of time reading a lot of the early suffragettes and, you know, the feminists of that day.
Yeah, well, I don't think she reacted out of the ordinary just because the movement at the time was still in this tenuous state. Everybody had kind of agreed to, we're going to hold off on this until, you know, in terms of a government solution, until the war's over. But so everything was kind of in this status holding pattern. But, you know, women would still meet, like you saw in the episode, and have discussions and stuff like that to fight for equal rights. But I think two things on her part, number one, you got to remember, they're both probably 17, so they're both pretty young.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other thing, too, is I think what probably impacted her decision more than anything, and it's not really stated, but I think it's there in the performance. He's about to go off to war, and she doesn't necessarily want to be a widow.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right.
So, they have this, argument, just for the audience. They have this argument, she doesn't want to get stuck in life. She's concerned that she wouldn't be able to have a career in writing. And right. He's trying to explain to her, hey, I want to be an archaeologist. This will work out great. And she does state fairly early on in the relationship. There's one point he makes an offhand comment that someday he wants to take her to the Great Wall of China. And she does say, oh, so you're planning my life out for me already. So I do think she does have some resistance to that part of it. But
yeah.
I kind of felt, for me personally, because it's, you got to remember, it's also playing with his, it's kind of contrasted, at the beginning of the story with his friend Remy, going off and meeting this lady who's a widow and getting married. And when you find out at the end of the episode, he got married to her, and now he's got Insta family.
Yep.
So it's kind of the contrast of those two things together, because Remy obviously is a little older, but he wants that companionship and that sense of closeness with a woman and a family, and he's still looking for that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of the reasoning. At least I just felt more the war probably had to do with it, because you're making a decision right before you're going off, you're getting on a train and leaving. So, but the interesting thing is, a question I had at the end of the episode, and I love the way it's kind of hanging out there. If she felt that way, why does she come back? Which makes me think she's probably changed her mind.
And he's already on the train and too far away.
Right. But he's already on the train, and there's that, you get to see both of them, in those great shots, for television. They're great, dynamic looking shots. And it's just like, and there's that look between them. It's like, oh man, they would have gotten married, so that's kind of where I walked away from it at the end.
Well, and I think the beauty of this too is in like you said, the writing really does such a great job. When they first go to tea together and they get the opportunity to go back and forth with the languages that they know.
Oh, that's such a great scene.
And they keep one-upping each other, he talks about how he would rather read ancient Greek instead of, a modern Greek. And it's just, as both of us coming from a faith background, there's such a funny moment there in that, that we can resonate with, the Bible being in ancient Greek and Hebrew and those things. So we kind of understand Indy's fascination with those, which is wonderful. But I think that moment really shows how much of a complement they actually are to one another as characters, because they love and enjoy very much the same things. Right. These are not characters to which you feel like, oh, if they got married, they would truly really have to be giving up a lot. for one another. And in all actuality, if these characters got together, what you would probably sense from them is that they would benefit one another and complement one another in a way to which would actually be beautiful. In the way in which, you know, marriage itself, when it's at its best, does. And I think the writing, like, and you mentioned this, really does that extremely well. And it's one of the things that helps with the episode. But I also have to say, you know, one of the beauties of this episode, and we were texting a little bit while I was watching it for my first time, but the casting of this episode is just so spot on. You know, obviously,
oh, it's perfect.
Flannery is fantastic as young Indiana Jones, and we love him as young Indiana Jones. He does a great job. But young Elizabeth Hurley in this episode has such an incredible vitality to her, comes off so incredibly natural and just effervescent that it makes sense as to why any young man would fall in love with her. And not only is that great casting, but that's great acting, but that's also fantastic directing to be able to get that from your actors here that allows you to feel that as you're watching the episode.
The thing that's so great about her performance, and I mean great, is that there is this layer of she's strong, she's, you know, she's got her life kind of pre-planned out and she's on a course, but there's also this underlying vulnerability her performance, which is just, that's the kind of stuff that more experienced actors are able to layer in their performance. And she just does it. It's just so effortless. It's like she plays comedy so well. Too.
Agreed.
There's the great scene with the, where she stands up for herself in front of Winston Churchill in the dinner scene. And it's such a great scene. It's just, the one guy, he really didn't get enough credit with the show. Ronnie Cotier, who plays Remy, he's barely in this episode, but his presence in this episode is so wonderful. He's just this wonderful character actor.
Yeah.
He's got a charming, whimsical aspect about him, but you'll see later on there, it gets serious when we get into the war years, but the cast is so free flowing. They're just firing on all cylinders. You got Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh my gosh. As her mother,
and just that performance, and she's barely in the episode. She's in the episode like two or 3 minutes, but when she describes, you know, the tube being forced down her throat, I actually started crying again because it's the performance. You can tell it's paining her to recall this. And then her husband, Wade, just holds her hand and just, it's just, the cast is just,
I'm right there with you in that sense that it's incredibly brilliant the way in which the cast works in this episode. I'm glad that you called out Vanessa Redgrave. I think she is phenomenal in the episode. She's actually just one of my favorite people. Whenever she's in a role, there's something so believable about her, right? And there's just a grace about her. There's this vitality about her that just, it's incredible. I really do love her as an actor. And then at the same time, you know, this episode has the great surprise of having somebody like, you know, Julian Fellowes as Winston Churchill, which, you know, he's going to become a name that many people will know because of his work as a writer for Downton Abbey and The Gilded Age, which is on now. And so, you know, this show is just chocked full of people that go on to do incredible things or already had done incredible things. And this is just adding to the dimensions of the show and the character of Indiana Jones. And You know, for me to be watching this for the first time, I'm really drawn to the fact that what I'm learning about Indiana Jones here still feels very relevant for the character as we move forward, really. You know, and that, you know, I can see bits and pieces of what happened here, and the fact that I know that Indy's going to live through World War One, and him coming out of World War One and who he becomes before the Second World War begins is going to be somebody who becomes much more about himself and his fortune and glory and all that, which we're going to get in the Temple of Doom, right? Which is going to lead to a change for him there that leads to the change in Raiders. And then, you know, so the goal, the wonderful aspect of this show is because it's really created through the lens of George Lucas, who knows this character so well, and it's based on stories by him. It's the thing that helps guide the character and make it feel consistent. And, you know, as Chris and I over on Saddle Up have been talking about the latest season of Strange New Worlds, you know, one of the things about that show that just seems to be missing is this kind of understanding of Star Trek itself and the, you know, to truly bend or break rules of a universe that has been created, you have to truly understand that thing so you understand how that's possible. Okay, where can I mold things, bend things, and is it possible to kind of somewhat almost break this? And that's where this doesn't even feel like it's even coming close to bending or breaking. It just feels like it's fitting within the milieu that we know as Indiana Jones. And that's something to which franchises, as they grow, don't always do well. And so far, I mean, I know we're only two episodes in, but this really does seem to be consistent and coherent with what I know of the character later on.
Well, and I think that's the, I think that's kind of, I hate using the word so flippantly. It's not really flippant. The genius of George. This is an episode of a show called Indiana Jones, and there's literally only one action sequence, and all it is Indy and Vicky hiding from dirigibles dropping bombs on a town on London. And it's literally like 30 to 40 seconds. That's the only action in this episode, but it still feels like Indiana Jones, and the reason why is it's all grounded in the character of Indiana Jones. And Indiana Jones, the character, is consistent. So that's why the show works, is because it's Indy, and you're learning little nuggets of things that, you know, impact the character that we all love. And I think that's why the show works so well, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing about this, and the only thing, now, all that I've said there, I think the only thing that it does feel like it doesn't quite fit, I guess, maybe with, you know, what we see in, you know, Dial of Destiny. And I think the problem with that is that it's written by Mangold, who's not probably taking any of this into account.
Right.
Is the end of the episode, which is the moment in which he realizes that who he was listening to have a conversation behind him is actually Vicky, and they reunite. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Indiana Jones meets his original, his first love, and nothing comes of that. And then, of course, we know what we see in Dial of Destiny. That does seem slightly strange, that's the case.
Yeah, I look at, I hate to say it, I look at Dial of Destiny as a alternate Indiana Jones universe story, to be fair.
I mean, to be fair, too.
So, but you're gonna run into, but you know what? Yeah. You're gonna run into some other things. Like, you're gonna find out. I'm gonna burst your bubble here. You're gonna find out in another book in that Indiana Jones has a daughter as well. So, yeah. So, but we never establish who the parent is. You know, who the mother is. That's the whole thing. So
we also get the end of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where he's married to,
right,
you know,
and if you do chronologically, if you do it, you know, year by year, theoretically she's only in her early 40s, I believe, at this point. So
yeah,
she could have a kid, even though it's played by a woman who's clearly in her, you know, late 50s, yeah, early 60s. So I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's nerd talk.
Yeah, was there anything else, you know, especially for you, as you've been pretty watching this episode, was there anything else that kind of stuck out to you?
One of the things I just wanted to address really fast, that I really, again, it points to a really great script, is that I love the historical anchor for this episode is actually Sylvia Pankhurst, who was a woman's one of the leaders of the women's suffragette movement in England. What was really interesting about her, though, is they chose a woman who's not one of the main players in the women's suffragette movement. Her mother and her older sister were the two primary movers and shakers of the suffragette movement. The interesting thing about this episode, and I just wanted to touch on this briefly. So her sister and mother the family was fairly well off, and most of the suffragette movement up to that time had been kind of this top down thing where it was the aristocracy and middle class women who had money who were kind of leading the movement, and the women at the bottom, you know, the workers, the stay at home moms who didn't have a job, they were kind of left out in the cold. Sylvia was different because Sylvia was actually a full-on socialist, and she very much joined in the worker movements, and she looked at it as it needed to be a grassroots movement from the ground up, you know, from the labor force. And so I really enjoyed the fact that they kind of leaned into that. And, you know, for example, they, you know, Indy and Vicky attend this meeting, which is about women getting equal pay for equal work, because now they're working in munitions factories,
right. Yeah.
Because men are going to be off fighting the war. I really like that, because that would just, to me, that's a smart writer who really understands the material that they're working with and is able to construct a story around that works. It's just, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I just love that.
Yeah. And you know, I think the other brilliance of the episode is the way in which it does deal with the reality of these type of movements, and it does ask poignant questions about your movement may be important and right, but how do you actually move that movement forward? Do you take drastic violent actions, or do you kind of to put it in these terms, do you kind of move down the Gandhi route, or do you, or the Martin Luther King route, or do you move down the Malcolm X route, right? And those are very different routes to take. And that was touched upon in this episode. And I think what it did then and what it does now is that just helps us to see there are further questions to be able to be discussed in this and in all movements of history. And so to look at it just one-sided is detrimental to our understanding of historical movements. There's always going to be good in movements, and there's always going to be things where we'd be like, not sure that was the greatest. And that's where I really appreciate the honesty of the episode and the honesty of the writing to kind of treat history not as this kind of glorious rose-colored glasses endeavor, but to treat it as something that we should look at very honestly and openly.
Right. And that's one of the things I think, as the show goes on, we'll continue to see, is that you can tell that Lucas was definitely thinking of school children when he wrote this show, that he wanted kids in class to watch an episode and have a debate, you know, over what they talked about in this episode. You know, this is a great debate to have in a class, you know, in a history class, you know, women's suffrage and the right to vote. And what's the right way to go about achieving that end, and what's the wrong way? You know, those are great questions. And so that's one of the things, yeah, I really appreciate about the show, that it doesn't whitewash it one way or the other. It kind of just, mm-hmm, here's what's going on. Here are the opposing sides. And yeah, let's talk about it.
What do you think you'd end up rating this episode? London, 1960.
That's a tough one. It is one of my favorites. I do like to leave some room because I would probably go to like a 4.25 out of 5. It's really that good. I could even theoretically go higher, but there are a couple of more impactful episodes I know that are coming down the pike that I want to kind of save for those ratings. So that's probably what I'd put it at. It's great script. The acting is just amazing. I can't say enough about it. And Joel McNeely's score, oh my gosh. If you have not got the Varese Sarabande's soundtracks, you need to find them. Even if you have to, get engaged in some piracy, get yourself a copy of those and just listen to the wonderful soundtrack to the show. So that's where I'm gonna put it at.
I think that I'm right there with you in the sense that I couldn't agree with you more. This does truly seem to be a very solid 4 for me. And I just enjoyed the episode so much. I really did enjoy watching this episode. I enjoyed spending time with Indiana Jones at this point in his life. I enjoyed it, you know, spending time with Vicky. And I think the beauty of this is the way in which the characterization of Indiana Jones and what's happening to him in his life is compelling. But what I'm seeing here is in some ways similar to what they were able to pull off in, say, like the Clone Wars, where you can tell all of these different types of stories and you can utilize different genres to do that. And at the same time, keep it feeling like an Indiana Jones. So this was the Indiana Jones love story. And there's something great about that. George really seems to be somebody who has kind of cracked a code on what it means to diversify a franchise through genre storytelling while at the same time keeping it true to the franchise that it comes from.
Yep.
And not everybody's couldn't cracked that more code. Yep. So, well, Yancey, this is obviously, I can't wait for us to dive into more of this show. I'm really loving it so far. But if people wanted to talk more Young Indiana Jones or anything else with you, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on X, formerly Twitter, at Galandro1. That's named after a character from the Brian Daley Han Solo novels. That's my handle on pretty much every social media platform. If you look me up on Facebook, I'm just under my name, Yancey Evans, and I am in the process of finally resurrecting my blog, which is wordpress.onesaga.com. I'll probably be coming out with a couple of articles here in the next couple of weeks. So that's where you can find me.
That's great, and I'm very much looking forward to those articles because your blog was good back in the day. So you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing02. Of course, here on the network outside the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of these franchises we love outside of Star Trek, Lots of great Star Trek talk, of course, with Chris Jones. We just wrapped up the third season of Strange New Worlds with Saddle Up, and then we're going to be getting back to our rewatches with Voyager and Enterprise and Deep Space Nine. So check all of that out. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, I've got a completed show called Owl Posts with Treya Kaufman talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, and then Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. But as always, thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now you're here.